Hey, good morning. How is everybody?
Oh, come on, guys. Come on.
How are you doing? Are you doing good? Good. I'm glad. My name is Dan. I'm a youth pastor at Winnipeg E Free Church. So you know it's bad when they ask the youth pastor to come and speak, eh? No. That's good. We're going to study a little bit in Acts chapter 10. So if you got your Bibles, that's where we're going to be going this morning. And while you're getting there, I'm actually going to let you play youth pastor a little bit. And I want you to pretend you're youth pastor for a minute, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a scenario. And I want you to tell me what you would do in it, because I realize youth pastoring is a very interesting job, right? So here's a scenario. You have a youth group, and you have a bunch of kids come out, and your youth group comes from different walks of life, let's say, you have a group of grade 7 girls in the small group. So let's say you have about 10 grade 7 girls in the small group, and about half of them are from families that grow up in the church, that homeschooled and sheltered, and kind of view the church as sort of a haven for all the bad stuff that happens in the world, right? And the other half don't go to church. And didn't grow up in church. In fact, they come from a very, dysfunctional and broken family setting, where they're forced to deal with adult issues when they're 13 years old. So in this small group, you have two upbringings. And you're ministering to them, you're sharing them about Jesus, you're having a good time with them. And all of a sudden, the girls from sort of the more worldly life start asking really adult questions in small group. Stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think to talk about at that age level, right? So because they're new to church and they don't understand, and you're trying to answer the questions about Jesus and life and about sexuality and all that kind of thing, you start answering them, right? And then it gets back to the parents from the homeschool kids that you're talking about these more mature issues, and they don't like it. In fact, they say, no, we don't think that issue should be talked about at this age level. And so then you're stuck. You're stuck between two different kinds of kids. And so turn to the person next to you real quick. Just real quick, give a 30-second, what would you do in that scenario kind of thing. How do you minister to both kind of kids at the same time? Go. Just really quick, what would you do? I'm going to call out an answer or two. I'm going to ask. What would you do? All right. Anyone want to volunteer? I kind of do this in youth group all the time. Kind of do a little discussion. Anyone want to? I'll force an answer, I promise. Okay. What would you do, anybody? Any takers? Any takers? What would you do if that was your youth group? Yes. Yeah, okay. That's a good answer. What about how would you approach the parents who feel a little bit more like they want to shelter their kids a little bit? How would you deal with that? Suck it up, princess. It's a very interesting question, isn't it? And it's one that I've actually faced as a youth pastor, right? To be honest with you, I think I made the wrong choice. When I was a youth pastor, I was faced with that exact scenario, and a lot of the parents had these kids that grew up in the church who wanted their kids to be safe and felt like you would deal with those issues more at an 18 or 19-year-old level as opposed to a 12-year-old level. And so I caved. I gave in to the parents, and guess who left? The kids who came from the more worldly kind of view, because their questions weren't being answered, because they came to church, this is what I need God for, this, and I'm searching for him and I can't find him and all this kind of thing. And I made a mistake then, I think. But it begs a bigger question for us today. And you see, the question I was really facing wasn't, you know, do I minister to homeschool kids or, you know, kids who don't go to church? The real question I was faced with was, how do I share Jesus with people from all different walks of life? Like, and if you think about it, as a youth pastor, I deal with that question all the time. I get athletic kids, I get smart kids, I get kids from different races and different languages, and I get kids that are bullied, kids that come from abusive homes, and kids that come from healthy homes, and they all come to youth group. Like, and somehow I got to figure out how to share Jesus with them. And on top of that, I have different levels of maturity, right? Like, so I have the kids that want to serve, and then I have kids that, you know, want to grow closer in the relationship with Jesus. And then I have kids who don't care about any of that. They're just there for whatever we're doing that night. When I have kids that don't even care about what we're doing there that night. They're just there for their friends. And then on top of that, I have kids who are forced to be there by their parents, right? And so I have all this kind of running around, and it begs a really huge and difficult question for me, is how do I minister and share Jesus with all kinds of people at the same time? Like, and if you think about that, that's actually not just a youth issue, that's a church issue. Like, it's a church issue. Like, people are awesome, aren't they? Do you love people?
Yeah.
Yes. I asked that in my church, and there was like this dead silence. Like, I'm like, oh man. Like, but people are awesome, and I think God loves people. He enjoys people. And I think one of the things that goes on is like, people come from all different walks of life. Some are married, some are not, some are single, some are young, some are old. Some have disabilities, some are athletic, some are from different races. And so what happens is you get all those kinds of people and coming through the church. Like, and you're forced to answer the question, how do I share Jesus with people from different walks of life, right? And so today, we're going to actually look at the story of Peter, Cornelius, and Cornelius, and I'm just going to give you one thought to start out that way, and then we'll close. Is that good? Everyone smile and nod? Yeah, okay, all right. So our story starts in Acts chapter 10, and this is a story about Peter and Cornelius, specifically Cornelius coming to faith in Jesus. And if you know the story of Acts or what's been going on at this time, Acts really deals with what happens after Jesus rose from the dead, right? So Acts deals with the aftermath of the cross, right? And specifically, what we're learning in Acts right up until chapter 10 is the formation of the church, right? So, you know, people start, you know, Jesus rises from the dead, the apostles pray, you know, tongues come down, and all of a sudden people start sharing the gospel left, right, and center. People are getting saved, right? The church is formed, right? There's persecution. There's people are getting healed. People are coming to the cross, all that kind of thing. What's interesting about that, though, is that it is all taking place within the cultural context of the Jewish faith, right? Like, it's all happening within one people group. Like, and this story is the very first time that we know of that someone outside the Jewish faith comes to faith in Jesus. So we first meet Cornelius in Acts chapter 10, and we're told a few things about him. And first of all, we're told that he was a centurion, and specifically he was a professional military officer, okay? And that in his job was to command troops as small as 100 to as large as 400, right? And why that's important for us to know is the kind of man that Cornelius was, because these kind of centurions weren't centuries weren't chosen just willy-nilly. They were chosen because they displayed an act of leadership, bravery, and loyalty, right? Like, so this is kind of telling us who Cornelius is. He's a brave man, he's loyal, he's a leader. And this is the kind of guy that we're introduced to here. We're also told that Cornelius converted from a Roman faith to Judaism. Like, So in ancient Roman times, it's kind of like a little bit of like all culture today. People had different kinds of religions, and people were very pluralistic and believed in all sorts of gods, and that was the Roman culture. And so Cornelius was this kind of guy that decided, you know what, I really like the Jewish faith, I'm going to convert over to it. Really. And we're told that Cornelius was a righteous man. We were told that he prayed and gave, and he did it so authentically that the people in the Jewish community gave him high respect. So this is a man who you know, he's just a good guy overall. Like, and so one day, Cornelius is praying, and God gives him a vision. Like, comes down and says, "Hey, Cornelius, I just want you to know something. I want you to know that you're doing a good job, that I see that your prayers and your charity has been given, and I see that, and I just want to, I see this. Like, and I want to tell you something, there's a really important truth that you need to hear, and there's something I want to invite you into. So here, here's what you need to do. You need to go find a guy named Peter. Like, go find him. This is his address. This is where he lives. And bring him into your house, and he's going to tell you something that is really, really, really important, right? So that's what Cornelius does. He tells a couple of his servants, hey, can you go find this guy named Peter? This is an address. This is all I know, right? It's just kind of really weird. Like, and so that's sort of what happens, right? At the same time this is going on, God gives Peter a vision of animals that Jews regard as unclean because of the ceremonial law of the Old Testament. And in that dream, a voice came down from heaven and said, "Rise and eat." But Peter protested that the animals were unclean because he grew up believing that, and that's what he was taught. Like, and the voice came back with these decisive words in verse 15. It says this, "What God has called cleansed, you must not call uncommon." Right? Like, this happened three more times, and then he woke up, right? And we can get in all sorts of theological debates about what the dream means and doesn't, but for this time, because we don't have a lot of time, and I want to make sure I don't go overboard, like, because no one told me how much time I had. Like, but just so I'm not one of those long-winded preachers, the point of the vision here is to say, because of Jesus' work on the cross, people from other nations who once would have been considered unclean and not to be associated with are now to be considered clean, right? So there were laws that you had to separate and be with a certain people and not touch the people who were not Jewish and kind of like live apart from them. And then Jesus is coming, kind of saying in this dream, you're not supposed to. Like, that's not the truth. So after this dream, like, two guys knock on his door and say, hey, this is the story. It's going to sound really weird. This is a guy named Cornelius, and he needs you to come over to his house, like, right now. So Peter agrees, like, and then goes into the house. And he walks into the house, and he agrees to meet with him in his house, which is actually against Jewish law. But because of his vision, he goes in anyway. And he asks Cornelius the reason why he was invited. Hey, thanks for inviting me. You know it's against the law that I come into your house. Why am I here? Like, so Cornelius tells him, he says, I had this dream, and yada, yada, yada. And he said, hey, listen, God told me that you have something to tell me. So my whole family is here, and we want to hear what it is that you have to say. Like, so tell us, right? So tell us, I'm here, I'm all yours, I want to know. Like, and in that moment, Peter decides to tell him about Jesus, about Jesus' life, about his teachings, about his death and resurrection on the cross, about the forgiveness of sins. And so he's just going on, and he's telling people about Jesus and all this kind of thing. Like, and in that, right when that's happening, something really weird happens if you look at the text. Like, people start speaking in tongues. Like, and that's really, really weird. Like, because the only other time that happens is in Acts chapter 1 and 2, right? Like, and in that case, people are speaking in different kinds of languages so that people can know the gospel of Jesus around them. Like, but it's kind of weird. It's not in the setting. And so I'm going to take a stab at this and say that the reason that they're speaking in tongues is for Peter's sake. Like, Because you have to remember what's going on here. Like, Peter is having a vision from God telling him that the way he grew up is no longer valid anymore. Like, I don't know about you, but if I had a dream from God that totally shattered the way that I grew up, I wouldn't be buying it right away, would you? I wouldn't. Like, as you have to understand that while Peter is going through this experience, he's really wrestling with what he's been hearing, right? Like, so here's the thing. Peter sees people speaking in tongues, and I think it's God's way of saying, hey, you know what? You see this thing that happened over here with all these Jews who followed the law and did all this kind of thing? It's real. It's over here. See this? Like, the same thing that happened to you happened to them. Peter, this is real. I want people outside Judaism to know me. Get on board, right? Because here's why I know that. Like, it wasn't until this happened that Peter said at the very end, he said, can we stop these people from getting baptized? And Scripture makes this point of telling us that the people that were around Peter were Jewish. So there was this whole thing of like, hey, you know, do people who are outside the faith get, or Jewish faith, get to see Jesus like we do? Like, now, please don't imply that I have to say you have to speak in tongues in order to do that. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is I think this is a confirmation for Peter that his dream was actually from God. And so here's what we learn about Peter and Cornelius that I think applies to us today. Okay. What did I say here? God had to teach Peter that people didn't have to act like Jews to find salvation in Jesus. God had to teach Peter that people didn't have to act like Jews before they had salvation in Jesus. It says this in verse 35. I want you to catch this. This is Peter's talking. I don't know if it's on the screen. Verse 34. This is what it says. Then Peter said, I now realize how true it is that God does not show favoritism, but accepts people from every nation who fear him and does what is right. Friends, God does not give preferential treatment to one group or people at the expense of another. Okay? And that, I think, is really important when we're trying to answer this question, how do we minister to people from all kinds of different walks of life? I think it starts by reminding ourselves that they don't have to act like us, or talk like us, or dress like us, or even have the same morality as we do before we introduce them to Jesus Christ. God does not show favoritism. God does not give preferential treatment to one person or group at the expense of another. As long as people seek him out, he will accept them. The gospel crosses all ethnic, social, and economic barriers. It is the most inclusive and exclusive thing you've ever heard of, right? So inclusive in the fact that everybody gets a chance to meet Jesus. Everybody. Everybody. Like, and exclusive in the fact that you can only find salvation in Jesus. Like, how do we share that Jesus? How do we be people that share Jesus with all kinds of different people? We have to live in a way that communicates that God is willing to accept people from all walks of life as long as they seek him. That the way we live, our personal faith needs to communicate that God does not give preferential treatment to one group. No one should be spurned, shunned, rejected because of their ethnic origin or race or cultural or physical traits, or how much money that we need to remind ourselves, friends, that all kinds of people need Jesus. Are you married? Who's married in this room? You need Jesus. Do you have kids? Yeah, you need Jesus too. Do you have a lot of money? You probably need Jesus. Do you have no money? You need Jesus. Are you all kinds of different skin colors need Jesus? Are you smart? You need Jesus. Are you artsy? You need Jesus. Are you single? You need Jesus. All kinds of people need Jesus. And here's the rub for me, okay? So I'm from Winnipeg East Free Church, and that's a multi-generational church, right? So one of the things that we deal with in the church is kind of this age barrier thing, right? Where we're trying to get young people in the church, but we have a group of old people, right? We're seniors. And one of the things that sometimes happens is the seniors feel like they're being pushed out of the way for the sake of the new generation, right? Like, and one of the things that I really want to communicate is that the gospel is for everyone, regardless of age, right? Like, and my grandma, I'm gonna dovetail just a quick sidebar on this. My grandma passed away this month, or a couple months ago, right? And she had dementia, right? The last time I was able to have a coherent conversation with her was when I was married, which was 7 years ago. And for the last 7 years, I've been watching what happens when a sinful world or the broken world is taken away from her. It's taken away from her, her health, her friends, her house, her family. Like, it's taken away everything from her. I remember I took my son, James, he's 2 years old, to meet her, and she thought that my wife was a hallucination. Like, and I see that, and I see that, man, she needs healing that's found in Jesus. Like, every age group, every single person needs Jesus. And when we come to a faith in Jesus Christ, when we want people outside the faith to come to know that, we have to accept that there are going to be people who don't look like us or talk like us or dress like us that answer this building. Now, here's the thing. I'm sure that you've heard, you're here this morning and you're like, hey, like, okay, Jesus, everyone gets a chance at Jesus. Jesus is for everybody. That's not news, okay? That's not news. I've heard that before. You know, why am I here on this cold day hearing about this? Well, here's the reason why. You have to understand and think about Peter's part in the story. Peter's part in the story tells us that whenever we bring Jesus to people, we bring baggage. Okay? And some of it's cultural. Some of it, it doesn't even have to be anything wrong. It could be the way that we're brought up. It could be the way that we think or the way that we were educated. It could be a character defect. It could be anything. But there are some things in our life that whenever we share Jesus, we bring baggage with us. It was true for Peter. Like, Peter was this guy who was sharing Jesus left, right, and center. You need Jesus, you need Jesus, you need Jesus, and you need Jesus. But the truth of the matter is there was something in his heart, something he was believing in, that actually hindered and stopped people who needed to hear the gospel from hearing the gospel. And it actually took God to actually confront him about it. To say, hey, here's something that you're doing and believing that is not true, and it's hindering you from speaking the truth of the gospel. And before he could do it, God had to expose it, confront him about it, and actually share with him the truth. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to walk in that house and tell Cornelius about Jesus. And anyone who's not Jewish in this room wouldn't be here. Right? Wouldn't be here. And so, friends, I have to say, like, in Peter's day, like, you could follow God if you were outside Judaism. You just had to act like them and talk like them and all that kind of thing. You had to be like them. And friends, that spirit exists in the church today, does it not? That's why this message is important. Because that same attitude has been around in the church for 2,000 years. A quick story about how this works on a smaller scale. Like, I used to go to a church where people dressed up really, really nice. Like, and one particular day, like, this church was a good heart, good, just really passionate about sharing Jesus with lost people, people outside the faith. And one day, this girl walked in the church. She was about 17 years old, and she was not dressed in stuff that was appropriate for church. I couldn't defend it, right? Like, it was sketchy no matter what situation or context you were in, right? Like, but she came in to church to find Jesus. And before she could sit down, she was given a 15-minute sermon by two well-meaning ladies about how immodest she was dressing. Didn't know her, didn't understand. And she would just sit there being lectured about how she was dressed. Like, she didn't come back. Like, she didn't come back to church. Like, friends, that attitude can exist. Because the truth is like, at Winnipeg E-Free, people walk in the door with no connection to the church whatsoever. And you know what I'm afraid about? I'm afraid that one day, someone's going to spend their Saturday nights partying and just doing all sorts of stuff. They're going to wake up Sunday morning with hungover, kind of like in tattered clothes, and there's just going to be something in their heart, something like Cornelius that kind of says, man, I need something more. And they're going to walk into a church building. Like, and the very first thing that people are going to assume is you're living a rebellious lifestyle and how dare you come in here and all that kind of thing. When really, what we're looking for is we don't know why that person is here. We don't know why that person is here. And friends, like, I think that this question is becoming more and more relevant for us as the culture around us becomes less and less Christian, okay? People don't go to church anymore. Like, don't know how to act in church. They don't know how to come through the doors. They don't know how to dress. Don't know how to say. Like, and I see this from a parenting perspective. Because I dropped my kid off at a daycare, and there are parents in there that raise their kids genderless. Like, and I want to invite them to church. Say, hey, you know what? I need Jesus. Like, but then, you know, there are people at my church who raise their kids up in a homeschool environment. And so right away, like, I'm pitting, like, a five-year-old kid who's grown up in a homeschool environment versus a five-year-old kid who's grown up transgendered with parents like that in the same building, in the same service. And somehow, I have to be able to share Jesus with them. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, there are people that are going to be walking in, not dressing, smelling, or acting anything like us. And you need Jesus. Like, how do we start sharing Jesus with all kinds of people? We have to remember that they don't have to be like us before we give them Jesus. Okay? We do run a ministry down in Point Douglas called Grace Point, and where we get to share Jesus with all kinds of people, from people from lower incomes. And the goal really isn't to make them middle class. The goal is to share Jesus with them. Like, we have to remember that. Like, so here's the deal. Like, I'll conclude with one thought, and I'll just leave it at this. Like, there's a group of churches in the States that I really love. They're called the Calvary Chapel Churches. And they respond during the 1960s, during the Jesus movement. And what happened was there was a pastor named Chuck Smith, and he was a pastor of a church of 16 people. Like, and so what he would do is he would go out into the communities where the hippies were, and he'd start sharing Jesus with them. And when he started doing that, the church grew, right? It grew so much that they had to tear down their building, and they built a new one. So they went from 16 to 2,000 in 2 years, right? Like, and by the time that they constructed the 2,000-person building, the first day that they opened, they were too big for that. So they went from 2 to 10 in 7 years, right? But the day that they opened their sanctuary, there were so many people from outside the church in the building that there was no room for the seats, so people started sitting on the aisleways there, right? And of course, there's a bunch of dirty hippies just kind of lying and sitting on the nice brand new carpet. Like, so what do you think the ushers did? Well, the ushers started shooing them away. Hey, if you can't find a seat, get out of here. All this kind of thing. And so the pastor looks at this and he starts looking at, hey, what are you doing shooing people out of here, right? Like, and he's like, well, they're dirtying up the carpet. So you know what the pastor did? He took a knife and started tearing up the brand new carpet in the church. Like, and he said, if one of them's got to go, it's got to be the carpet. Like, and so that movement, that heart and that attitude has spawned over 70 different church plants in 50 years. Like, because of the faith of Jesus Christ to spread the gospel. Like, so what I want to share with you is like, we have to
check our hearts. So tonight, today, when we go, I just want to ask a few questions, and then I'll close. Like, does God need to do the same kind of work in your heart that he had to do in Peter's heart before you accept people who don't look like you or act like you or talk like you? So here's the question. Who shows up at the front door here on Sunday morning that you tend to avoid, ignore, or not even notice? Like, and how is the Lord inviting you to welcome people like that in? Like, or what is one small adjustment you can make to show how it can serve, how it can make people feel more radically welcome? We do that, and the gospel goes out to everybody. And I think that's a good message, because the gospel needs to go out to all kinds of people, all kinds of different races and languages and socioeconomic barriers. And I think that's the story that Cornelius tells us, that the gospel is for the whole world. Can I pray? Can I nod? Yeah, okay, I'll pray. Father, thank you for this time together. Thank you for this chance to share a little bit about who the story of Cornelius. And we just want to come together, and I just want to say that and confess to you right now that there are times in my heart when someone walks in the church building and I kind of want to avoid them or not talk to them. We are just kind of put up a wall that I don't like them. There are people that I gravitate to more than others. And really, God, I want to be able to share Jesus with everyone who you bring into our past. So, God, would you help us this morning live that truth that the gospel is for all kinds of people and for the entire world, that everyone gets a chance to meet Jesus Christ. And the whole church said, amen.